I'm joined now by Jenny Branigan, who's a physiotherapist. And Jenny, earlier this week, we heard more warnings about the impact of sedentary or an inactive lifestyle on our health. But I suppose the problem is that for a lot of people, their daily reality is that they commute for hours in a car, they then sit hunched over a computer at a desk, and then they go home and they lie down on the sofa before bed. So you have some tips for us as to how to incorporate movement into our daily activities.
Yes.
Now, tell me first, though, what are the statistics about Irish people and sitting down?
Well, unfortunately, this latest research, it's part of the Irish Heart Foundation's Escape Your Chair campaign. So they're advising people to move more and sit less. So the research is showing that Irish people are sitting for an average of 7.3 hours per day. Now, as you say, in some cases it's going to be a lot higher with high levels of commuting, people sitting all day. And unfortunately now we're in a convenient sort of lifestyle where people don't go shopping anymore, they do online shopping. So they just have to sit in front of their computer.
So you could actually,
you know, you could do everything sitting down. There's no need to move.
Yeah. Okay.
So their whole focus now is, you know, move more, sit less. And this ties in very well with us as physiotherapists, because we're always trying to tell people to move more and to become more active.
And what conditions are we at risk of if we don't get up and move more?
So this research builds on increasing evidence that sedentary behaviour is associated with increased risk of developing, you know, type 2 diabetes, heart disease. So they're highlighting in particular heart disease and stroke, of course, obesity and certain types of cancer. There was research from the World Health Organization last year in 2018 that showed that a third of Irish adults are not getting enough exercise. So it's becoming a huge problem, and particularly as we look at this ageing population that we have. So they estimate that, you know, after 2040, that over 25% of the population will be aged over 65 years of age. So if we're looking at these types of behaviours causing these types of diseases, we're, you know, it's quite worrying, really.
Now, the pattern with a lot of people is probably that they are very sedentary for a lot of the time,
yeah,
and then they go out at the weekend and they do an Ironman triathlon, or they cycle up the side of a mountain, or whatever. So do you make up for all the sedentary behaviour if you're madly exercising at the weekends or whatever?
So previously it was thought that that would counterbalance this sedentary lifestyle, but the research is now saying that even these positive health benefits of exercise are not combating the level of sedentary behaviour that we're now adopting. So yes, that's definitely a worrying trend that, you know, we think that we can offset it, but actually the research is now showing that we may not necessarily be able to.
And in terms of the research, we hear different research all the time about how much exercise we're meant to be doing.
Yeah.
How much exercise do we need to be doing?
So again, the World Health Organization recommendation is 150 hours of moderate exercise per week. So if you break that down, you're looking at five sessions of 30-minute walking, say.
Okay, and then, so moderate would be walking.
Yes.
A brisk walk,
It's a brisk walk. So the way that you sort of quantify whether it's a stroll or a walk is, if you're with somebody, you can have a conversation with them, but you're a little bit breathless, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to sing a song. So that's the level of pace that you should be at. That's how your breathing should adapt to that level of intensity. So they're also saying that in addition to that, two sessions of strengthening exercise should happen during the week. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go and, you know, go for specific strengthening classes or go to Pilates or aerobics. Carrying your shopping bags counts as strengthening work. Doing the garden counts as strengthening work. So again, if you look back to where we're all, you know, doing things online and we're ordering our shopping online, we're losing out on the benefits of that. For example, even if you look at new cars now, you don't even have to pull down your own boot and exert that force to pull the door of the boot closed anymore. There's a button you can press on new cars so your boot closes. So everything is becoming more convenient, so we're not getting the benefit of having to use our muscles on a daily basis.
So even if you're using them in your day-to-day life, that all helps towards strengthening. And
Absolutely.
Of course, I was talking to someone else about this a few weeks ago, and it's that frightening thing that, so is it once you hit 30, basically, your muscles will start kind of diminishing if you don't.
Yeah, from kind of really 40s onwards,
40s,
you reduce your lean muscle mass if you're not maintaining it in any sort of manner above and beyond normal activities of daily living. And the funny thing about that is that you might look the same. So if you're in your 40s and you're still wearing the same clothes, you look similar in photographs, but actually your lean muscle mass is reducing and it's being replaced by fat. So you may not notice the difference until then. As physios, we see it when people say, well, I really didn't do anything and suddenly I have this pain. They get injuries from very innocuous reasons, because they don't have the muscle strength to do these normal activities because it's being replaced by fat.
Okay. Now, so long periods of activity, what does that do to our bodies?
long periods of inactivity.
Of inactivity.
Yeah, so it slows us right down. Our metabolism slows right down. So we expend less energy. So then the energy in our body is built up and it gets stored in the form of fat. So that triggers changes in our stress hormones. It increases our stress hormones, which then leads to things like higher blood pressure.
So doing nothing actually increases your stress hormones.
It does, because your body has to cope with that. It's not using the energy that you're taking on board from your food. So the other thing then is your blood flow changes. So we're not pumping our blood through our bodies in the same normal way. So that leaves us as sitting ducks then for things like blood clots and even varicose veins. So movement is key, and it doesn't have to be anything too dramatic. You don't have to be cycling up a mountain. You know, getting up and going to the bathroom on the next floor up and using the stairs to get there instead of using the bathroom that's next door to you. You know, little small changes like that can be enough to offset that.
Build it in there, yeah.
Building it into your day. And there's loads of ways that you can build it in. I mean, you should never take a lift when there's a stairs beside it. You should never take the escalator. If you look at these big shopping centres that we're all walking around these days, everybody's on those travelators. We should all be taking the stairs. Even put your bin from underneath your desk, put it over at the other end of the room. So you have to get up and walk to the bin, put your rubbish in it and come back. Drinking plenty of water is another great one, because not only does it make you need to go to the bathroom more frequently, but when you've drunk the water, you go and refill it. So it's about building in little things like that so you don't feel like you're having to go and move and exercise. It's just built into your routine.
Yeah, and you talk about as well, when we're in the office and that, right?
Yeah.
Walking meetings is one thing.
Yes, trying to walk and talk. So again, yeah, you know, you're sitting in one room and then you go to another room and you sit down with one person, say, you know, why not go outside and have that walking meeting where you can have a nice chat, you get a little bit of fresh air into the, you know, into the bargain, and you're moving, you're getting your blood flow moving, you're moving your muscles, and you're offsetting that sitting that's just so prevalent these days.
And then for commuters, if you know, a lot of people have to drive to work, have to get the train or whatever.
Yep,
you can build in activity into that.
You can build that in. So, you know, for example, if you walk to the nearest bus stop to your house, walk to the next furthest one away. So you get 5 or 10 minutes extra in the morning. Again, if you park somewhere, you know, not quite so close to your office, so you get a bit of a walk. So you're breaking that cycle of being in a commuting situation. Then you get 10 or 15 minutes to stop that cycle of sitting before you then sit at your desk for 7 hours. So again, just being clever and just, again, building in small little changes. It doesn't have to be anything monumental.
Yeah, and all these things add up, do they?
All
and they
of
actually
these things
make a difference.
Because people are focused on exercise, but actually it's more activity that we really want to promote. It's about moving more. And again, that ties in with this Escape Your Chair campaign. Move more, sit less. So they're not specifying what movement it has to be. Any movement is good movement, but it's just about getting your body moving and loading your joints, making your muscles work and keeping your blood pumping nicely through your body.
The other thing that you hear a lot of people say about exercise is that they're not actually doing it for their body, but they're doing it for all the other things, because there are loads of other benefits to the head and everything else, aren't there?
Well, absolutely. And actually, this ties in a little bit. It's World Physiotherapy Day tomorrow. I'm not sure if you knew that, Brendan, but we...
No.
So we're very excited about it. So it's on the 8th of September, so tomorrow. And actually, the theme of it this year is chronic pain. And we're trying to highlight the impact that chronic pain has on an individual's life. And that ties in exactly with what you're saying there, because we know that movement and... We know that movement has an effect on people's moods, it has an effect on people's sleep, and it has an effect on generally their quality of life. And quality of life is what we all want ultimately at the end of the day. So if you think about trying to build that into your day, it's difficult enough to build it into your day when you're fit and healthy and you have no pain.
Okay.
But if you're suffering from chronic pain, that's a huge ask. And what we as Chartered Physios then are trying to do is we're trying to encourage people not to be fearful of these movements that we know will benefit their mood, we know will help them sleep better, we know will help them move even better if they can just take that initial stepping stone. But the fear of that movement, if you have pain, is a big barrier. So
because we do tend to think that pain is our body telling us not to do something, don't we?
We do. And in the acute phases, that's absolutely true. But with chronic or persistent pain, where it lasts longer than approximately 3 months, the original reason for the pain is no longer there. The tissue healing has happened, but the persistent pain is still there. So people fear it because they think, well, if I don't move, I'm in a comfortable position now, I won't move, and then I won't get the pain again. But actually what happens there is you decondition your muscles, you get into a spiral of fear whereby basically you think, if I move and I feel that pain, I'm damaging myself. But we know that that is not the case. We know that you do need to move through this. And our jobs as physiotherapists then is to try and reassure people that they won't damage themselves by moving, that the pain will actually respond to movement and to continuing to go about their daily life. trying to keep themselves in their active hobbies, going to work as normal, participating in life, will actually improve their mood, it will improve their sleep, which has a knock-on effect on their pain.
So in terms of back pain, like sometimes people will think, and I guess it differs with what the reason for your back pain is, but a lot of the time people think, okay, I should just lie flat on the bed and not move at all. But there sometimes
that is the worst better, thing that you can do, actually. Okay. Bed rest is absolutely not the advice in that instance. We encourage people to keep moving. Now, you may not be able to move in the same way as you did 2 weeks ago before the onset of pain, but we encourage people to continue to move, albeit at a more gentle level, or they mightn't move quite as fast as they did, but the movement is important, because if you stay, if you lie down, as you said there, you'll get stiff, your muscles get deconditioned, and then you start to fear when you do move. Of course you'll feel more pain because you're getting stiff and then you're moving out of that position, so you have to offset that stiffness and you'll feel pain to do so. So as we encourage people to continue moving, that actually helps their pain, even though people think that's a contradiction, but it absolutely helps. Bed rest is never the way.
Now, a texter says, I recommended the option of stand-up workstations while working in the civil service. I was almost shunned by colleagues for this suggestion. I left. Where do you stand on stand-up workstations?
Well, I like anything that keeps you moving. So my recommendation with a standing desk is that absolutely it's a great thing, but I like the ones where you have a variable height desk. So you can spend some time sitting and then you change your position after 20 or 30 minutes and you can stand. Because in the same way that sitting all day is not good for us, standing all day will cause other problems. So it's all about moving your position. So your next position is your best position. So yes, a standing desk is great, but it needs to have a variable height so you can keep moving it.
So standing is still inactivity in a way.
Well, absolutely. You're in one position for a prolonged period of time, So we don't want that, whether it's sitting or standing. So yes, we want to be able to vary that movement and that body position.
Now, another texter, and I know you won't want to give a specific medical advice, but you might be able to give some general advice to this person. What about recovering from a heart attack in your 80s?
In what way?
I guess the person wants to know how they should kind of go about a bit of gentle movement, I'm assuming.
Well, certainly after a heart attack like that, you'd be referred into the cardiac rehab service. So you'd be exposed to graded exercise that's appropriate to your age and appropriate to, how ill you were with your heart attack. So cardiac rehab is absolutely about trying to improve people's fitness and improve people's health through movement. So often it would be static bike based, so an exercise bike, and again that would be a graded program with a therapist that's trained in specifically cardiac rehab.
Okay, so you should get professional help in that situation.
Absolutely, that would be there would be a movement element as part of your treatment there.
Okay, and gradually get back into it. Now, someone else wants to know how long, what counts as inactive. How long is an inactive period, and then how often should you get up, and how long when you are up do you have to move around?
Well, we recommend that people should try and change their position every 20 to 30 minutes. Now, of course, we recognise that that's not always possible if you're driving in the car, or if you're, if you're at a meeting or a work meeting or whatever. Unless if you're leading the meeting, maybe you could potentially lead everybody to stand up and do a few movements. But every 20 to 30 minutes, we're recommending that people change their position.
Now, obviously everyone doesn't work somewhere where they can be hopping up and down and doing jumping jacks or whatever. You have some exercises that you recommend that people can incorporate into their day at the desk.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you can check this out on the Irish Heart Foundation's website. Also, they have a thing called deskercise. Sorry, I can't say it there. But basically, exercise at your desk. So yes, there's plenty of things that you can do. And in fact, you can do them now sitting in front of me here, Brendan.
Okay,
so you can
go.
Practice rotating your neck. So you look over your left shoulder and then you look over your right shoulder. So if you look as far as you can over in each direction.
That is as far as I can.
So straight away, you're getting some nice mobility through your neck. You're improving your blood flow to the area and your muscles in that area are working.
Okay.
Now, roll your shoulders backwards for me, Brendan, please.
Okay. Yeah.
So nice shoulder circles.
Right. Can you hear the clicking there at home? Yeah.
Once it's a painless click, we're not worried about that.
Okay.
So that's absolutely fine. Now, what you can do then is you can practice raising your arms up and down. If you want to reach right up to the ceiling, that's fine. If you can't do that, you can just lift up to shoulder height.
Just literally putting your arms
literally
up and down.
Literally raising your arms up and down.
It all feels good to stretch the whole body out,
it
doesn't
does.
It?
Yeah, cross your arms over your chest now and rotate over to your right and over to your left. So the spine particularly loves this one.
Are we all doing this at home now?
So rotating to your right.
Where are we turning from? From just above the base of the spine, is it?
So yes, while you're sitting, it means that basically your pelvis is steady. So you're rotating your spine now to your right, and you're rotating your spine to your left. So this is a particularly nice one because we don't get enough rotation in general, and particularly for those, for those people who like to play golf, you need good rotation through your spine. So this is an excellent one. You can do so easily, and you can even sort of mask it if you look behind you in the office and pretend you're going to talk to somebody behind you, but actually you can be doing your rotational movements very easily. And of course it goes right down through the body then, so you can be practicing, you know, marching your knees up and down as you sit under the desk. I'm doing it right now, I'm sure you can't see it.
Literally, your
knees are coming up and down underneath the desk.
Are your feet coming up and down?
Your feet are lifting off the floor.
Okay.
So that's moving you through your hips. You can straighten out your knees. So again, working the quad muscles on the front of your thighs. Again, I'm sitting here doing it and you don't even know. So this is very easy to do at work. You can be practicing just lifting up your heels so that your toes are on the floor and your heels raise up and down. So again, you're maintaining nice blood.
It does loosen you out, doesn't it?
Isn't it so easy?
Yeah. And of course, a lot of that is focused on flexibility. And flexibility, apart from strength and cardio fitness, flexibility is the other big issue for people as they get older, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. So with each passing decade, we're losing approximately 10% of our flexibility naturally. So if we don't work on it, if we don't maintain it, it just continues to get, you just get stiffer. And that's then when people start to report being stiff in the mornings, getting out of bed, or stiff when they've sat in the car for a long journey. So you can absolutely do something about that so easily. And in fact, people sometimes say to me in work, in the clinic, you know, what's the best exercise? There is no best exercise. It's about just keeping your body movement. You're keeping your body moving. And the best movement that you can do is the one that you will do regularly. So if you love dancing, go and dance. If you love walking, go and walk. If you love swimming, do your swimming. So it doesn't have to be any one thing. It's just to keep your body mobile. And that's really the most important message.
Okay, as people get older, what would you recommend?
As regards exercising. Mm-hmm. So again, I mean, it's no different. What do you love doing? And that's the thing that you will stick at. You do need to be more careful as you get older, you know, into maybe your 60s and 70s, because our balance reactions do start to diminish. So it's very important then to make sure that if you notice something in that regard, if you're stumbling, if you're on a rough surface, or, you know, even being very careful about things in your home, that you don't have a rug that there's a corner that sort of juts up so that you might fall over it. Because when we're older, we're more prone to falls. And if we fall, you're more likely to sustain a fracture.
And it can be devastating.
Well, that's devastating.
It can have
a huge knock-on effect to people's independence and mobility. So it's no different as people get older. They do need to keep mobile. And in fact, because of what we talked about with the lean muscle mass, you do need to be getting some element of strengthening in, because that also helps to reduce frailty. And it, as I say, it improves the balance reactions, which is vital.
And so and before we go, any little tip for people to just a little thing they could do to work on their balance as they get older?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can practice just standing. For somebody younger, you can practice standing on one foot and just seeing, can you stay on that one foot for 30 seconds without having to readjust through putting your other foot down or holding the wall. As people get a little bit older, we would do that in a more careful setting, because we need to make sure, obviously, that nobody falls. So we would certainly advocate single leg standing for people who are younger, and as people get older, you can do double leg standing, starting to close the eyes, but you would need to have somebody with you initially to make sure that your balance is actually sufficient to be able to manage that.
Jenny Branigan, chartered physiotherapist, that was all really, really useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brendan.